Hello and welcome to the Moved to Action podcast. I am your host, Will Shuey, and in this episode, we will be hearing from Joy Bilharz, co-chair of CCWAG, an indivisible movement-affiliated organization in Chautauqua and Cattaraugus counties in New York. Last episode, we heard from a leader in Indivisible Philadelphia, a group working in a large, heavily Democratic city in a crucial swing state. In this episode, we hear from a grassroots leader in a red area of a state that votes reliably blue in every presidential election and is effectively ignored by presidential campaigns. We will hear from Joy about how her group works as an antidote to the isolation that progressives can otherwise feel in conservative and rural parts of the country. But before we get to that interview, let's hear from Sharon, who tells us what moved her to take action to help drive turnout in the 2020 election.
Hi, my name is Sharon, and I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I was moved to action by my desire to leave the world better than I found it. In 2016, I remember watching Pennsylvania flip from a blue state to a red state for the first time in decades. And I have to say that that was probably the first time that I truly felt the profound impact that my vote had on an election. I knew at that point that with higher voter turnout, Pennsylvania could flip back to a blue state. And I wanted to engage with my local community to make sure it happened in the year 2020. Hi.
So thank you for joining us. We're here with Joy Bilharz, co-chair of CCWAG, and I'm going to let her explain what CCWAG stands for, where it is. So Jill, why don't you start off by introducing yourself, and then I'll ask you about your organization.
Okay. My name is Joy Bilharz. I'm the co-chair of CCWAG, which is the Chautauqua Cattaraugus Women's Action Group, and I'm a retired professor of anthropology.
Great. Why don't we start off with this? If somebody doesn't know where Chautauqua or Cattaraugus is, how could we find it on a map?
Okay. If you have a map of New York, Chautauqua County is the southwesternmost county in New York, and Cattaraugus is directly to the east. They're both south of Buffalo. They're both very rural and very red.
Got it. So you're kind of, if you're following along the Lake Erie there, you're the part between Buffalo, New York, and Erie, Pennsylvania.
Right, exactly. Just about halfway in between.
Can you tell us a little bit about your organization? How long has it been around? How did it get started? Were you there when it got started?
It's been around since the Women's March in January of 2017. Like many groups, it was founded as a result of that. Prior to the actual march, a number of us had been sitting around talking about marches and what we could do. I mean, obviously in shock from the election results. And one of the women said, well, why don't we go to Washington? Maybe we could charter a bus. And people said, well, could we get enough people? And she went ahead and she chartered a bus and it was full. And some went to, the largest group, I think, went to Washington. Another group of us went to Buffalo. Some people stayed in the local towns. And so what happened was the women who went to Washington were a really varied group. There were some people who had never been in a protest before, others whose first protest probably occurred in utero, and, you know, everybody in between. And when they came back, they decided that they needed an antidote to the isolation and the disappointment, and that the march had provided that. There was a sense of unity, a sense of dedication, and they didn't want that to disappear. And so when they came back, everybody got together again, and what came out of it was the Chautauqua Cattaraugus Women's Action Group, which was aligned initially and still is with Indivisible as well as with Move On. So we try and coordinate activities, you know, with those groups.
You know, I remember back in 2017 when the Women's March on DC, and it felt like a Women's March on every place in the United States, happened. It's really impressive to see those pictures, those videos on the internet and on television of people out in every little town, every medium-sized city, and all the big cities were just flooded. And of course, Washington, D.C., there was seas of people that were there. And one of the things they said on TV, they said, is this a moment or a movement? And it seems that a lot of people got into, you know, indivisible or other similar type groups like you did. At the very beginning, what were you hoping to accomplish?
We wanted to make sure that 2016 was an aberration.
I'll just stop you right there and say congratulations. You know, we're recording this on November 17th, and President-elect Joe Biden is moving forward with what he can at this time to prepare for his administration. So congratulations on making sure that Donald Trump was a one-term president.
So our initial focus really was on elections and getting progressives elected, but we also had and continue to have an interest in particular issues. So we're both election-oriented and issue-oriented, and where the focus is depends on what year it is.
And you personally, were you involved with the organization right from the beginning?
I wasn't. I went to Buffalo rather than to Washington, and it was the women who went to Washington who sort of pulled us all back together again after they came back. So, and I was there from that time on.
And how did you, I mean, were these all people that you already knew? Were you meeting on Facebook? Were you using church groups or other kind of religious? I mean, what was your network?
I think there were a lot of different networks going on. I think there were some church networks. There were some friendship networks and other organizations, environmental organizations, so that even now we still have so many people who are members of unions, who are members of the Central Labor Council, or who belong to a conservation group. And so there's a lot of, you know, interaction among those groups, and I think that we pulled all of those networks together. And then as we became more active, word spread, there would be stories in, you know, in the media and things like that, so people could find us as well.
Has your organization been active in recruiting, trying to grow? How do you do that?
Well, it wasn't very hard in January of 2017. it has been harder since then, obviously. So we have a core group of probably 40 or 50 who are fairly active, and then a larger group that whenever there's an activity, you know, whether it's a protest or a letter writing campaign, they all come together. Even though, you know, everybody is active in the way that they are most comfortable. And so I think the fact that we provide a lot of opportunities of different things to do, that it allows people whose focus might not be on carrying a sign in the street, but who are really good writers. They write letters to the editor. We have several now who have columns in the paper as a result of this. And some people make posters. I mean, one of the things that I think is one of the things that we've been quite good at is a rapid response. So that when something happens, the impeachment, the death of RBG, we can be outside, we can make our voices heard very, very quickly. And we've got some really artistic people, and we've got posters. So people will set to work making posters. The word will go out that we're going to meet at this place at this particular time. And so Janie will come with a whole armful of really neat posters. So people can come and they don't have to bring their own poster or make their own poster. So you can do it at the spur of the moment. And I think that's really helpful.
You've had two election cycles, 2018 and 2020. And obviously, politics doesn't stop between elections. There's always, as you mentioned, there's the impeachment. There are other things that are happening that require a response from the grassroots. If you can just take me back, what were some of your favorite or most successful tactics?
I think think one of the things that we did early on, this would have been in 2017, maybe the spring of 18, was the first time that we were facing a congressional election. And there were, within the Democratic Party, nearly a dozen candidates vying. All of them were progressive. And that was in itself amazing. And so what we did was hold the candidates forum that was open to the public, brought together all of the candidates, their campaign managers. We served a continental breakfast. It introduced, members of our group who hadn't been politically active in the past to a lot of the local politicians. They got to know us. We got to know them. And so those were ties that we could draw on, people that we could go to, and they could also come to us. So I think that was having those ties to local political organizations, I think, is really helpful. I should point out that the chair of the Working Families Party is a member of our group. And also, since I was speaking of Bob, he is one of the male members. We have both male and female and trans, and anyone who wants to join is welcome.
Do you feel there are any areas where your organization has improved, that they've gotten better at any particular tactic or, made some relationship better that turned out to be important?
I think we've adapted really well to the pandemic. I mean, we had to switch from monthly meetings that would have 30 or 40 people to virtual meetings. And our, the number of people zooming in is slightly lower, but not all that lower. We found ways to do activities that were necessary, postcard writing campaigns. We've done some of those online, but we've also taken some to Lake Erie State Park. And so with masks, and there's picnic tables so you can space and everybody can be outside. People could bring their dog or their kids. So we created an atmosphere that tried to keep those personal ties and connections going. We've also been very cognizant of the despair that people have. So we've focused a lot on self-care and taking care of each other. So the group becomes a place that you can vent. And so I think that's been really good. So I think we're really adaptable. And I think adaptability, flexibility are two really important things.
Yeah, all those things are really important. I think everybody who wanted to get involved at any level in the 2020 election had a game plan, and then in March threw out the game plan and had to figure something else out, right? So it sounds like you guys were able to adapt, and that's really good. Your area has two particular traits that not every other area is going to have, a combination of, as you said at the very beginning of this interview, being a very red area, but also you're not in a swing state. You're in a solidly blue state. And so effectively, the presidential candidates are always just going to ignore you as a state. Whereas I imagine not too far from you across the state border in Erie, you had visits from candidates for vice president and president. So how do you keep interest going in an area like that in progressive politics?
We align with a lot of other groups. Again, those networks become important. So we've done programs that bring in the public that are not restricted to the groups, whether it's a free film or it's a debate watch. We work with the Citizens Climate Lobby to bring in an engineer who was speaking on climate issues, climate change, carbon footprints, and that was open to everyone. So we do a lot of things, or we try to do a lot of things within the community that are not as overtly political as being behind a sign, or things that can, in a red community, be readily dismissed as a bunch of radical women or feminazis or however they want to term us. So we want to have connections with issues that are important. And the environment is certainly one that's critical. But we've allied with high school students. So when they marched after Parkland, we marched with them. We marched with students for Black Lives Matter. And so we try and create build on the ties we have and create more. And particularly when we're working with younger people, getting them involved in the political process is often difficult, but things like George Floyd, Parkland, all of these have really galvanized a lot of the students. And so hopefully, we can continue that kind of work. But it is hard.
It's interesting that you mentioned working with the students and you mentioned Black Lives Matter and Parkland shooting specifically, because I did want to ask you if there are any particular racial justice concerns that your group has tried to tackle and what actions you've taken to try to address them in your area.
This has been an area where we really need to do more, and we're well aware of this. This is also a fairly white county, almost exclusively. In the nearby city of Dunkirk, there are a lot of Hispanic people. The most recent action, actually, we took was to send a letter, and one of our steering committee members read it to the county legislature, supporting a Latina woman who was all in line for a county post, had been approved for it, and got shot down in the crossfire between the Democrats, two factions of Democrats. And so we took a stand, because social justice is what we're about, that here is a qualified woman, a Latina woman, who no one disagreed was totally qualified. And yet the white boys playing politics took her out.
How did that end up?
We don't know. Okay. It hasn't come to a conclusion yet.
So, TBD.
It's things like that are important too. When you say, look, if we're going to have social justice, when we have good candidates for something, politics shouldn't get in the way. No collateral damage. If you guys want to fight, go ahead. But once again, it's women of color who pay the price.
I think a lot of us after the 2020 election were somewhat surprised that President Trump was able to get more votes overall than he got in 2016, that there was not a tide that lifted the Democratic Party to a stronger hold of the House. And I will be honest, I have no idea if there were any local elections around you, how they turned out. It's a lot easier to swallow those pills when Joe Biden won the presidency. That obviously makes it easier to handle. But how does your organization respond to frustrations in activism? There are always going to be times when there are setbacks. There are going to be times when everyone's discouraged. Has your organization done anything in particular to try to address that, or have you?
Not yet. We had high hopes for our congressional candidate who was running again, and she lost again. And I think we were all really surprised by that. It was a complete Republican sweep. And I think the scope of it, I think, surprised everyone. The one thing about being disillusioned is when you live in a red area, you get used to it. It's perhaps not as traumatic as it is in places that flip.
Yeah, for me personally, I have family who's in a very red rural part of Pennsylvania. I'm out there a lot. I live in Philadelphia, so I spend time in both bubbles, and it's hard to be in a bubble if you get a chance to do that, to move between areas. So I understand what you mean about having maybe more realistic understanding of what's going on if you aren't in your own bubble.
Yeah, I think the bubble is a problem, and I think we recognized that after 2016, which came as such a shock. But I think we're still kind of in those bubbles. Although I will say, when I worked in Pennsylvania this year, we were only able to do it once before the quarantine knocked that out, but four of us went and did literature drops, and there were far more posters and signs and flags for Biden. And that was true in Chautauqua and Cattaraugus County too, than you ever saw for Hillary. And I think that really encouraged me. People who had never put political signs out before now have Biden signs. It's just that everybody else just didn't put out their Trump signs, I guess. But I mean, I think that's what led to some of my surprise, because I really expected it to be not this close.
We haven't really heard yet, and I'd be happy to hear from you about what your level of activism, political activism, was before 2016. We've only talked about your participation with CCWAG. Obviously, there are joys to activism too, right? And it's particularly nice when you win, but there's also, as you've already talked about, the solidarity, the chance to feel support from other people who are like-minded. And I'm curious how those have grown, how those have changed for you personally from 2016 or before, if you want to talk about that, to now.
My own level of activism, you're asking?
Well, your own level of activism, or your just the joy that you receive from it, if any. I don't know.
Well, I think probably the greatest delight and shock I had was in 2008 with Barack Obama. I mean, to see a Black man elected president. And the image that I will forever have is an African-American woman in Grant Park, you know, looking up where they were projecting it with just tears streaming down her cheeks. And it was so powerful. And so I think there was a feeling that one could be successful, that things that you didn't perhaps expect to see in your lifetime could happen. And so I was hoping to see the next ceiling break in 2016, and that didn't happen. But it's happened in 2020 with Kamala Harris. So
one big question that I have about the Indivisible Movement going forward is, you know, the Indivisible Movement was built in the wake of the 2016 election. It's always had a supervillain. It's always had Donald Trump, where everybody can focus their energy on defeating Donald Trump. And now there will be, and you can see that it's already starting, there will be disagreements among a lot of people who were part of the coalition to put Joe Biden into the presidency about how to handle every part of the presidency, how to handle relationships with Republicans, how to handle the various voting blocs and interest groups inside the Democratic Party. And so I'm curious, on a very, you know, local level for your group, what you see for the next few years going forward.
I think our focus will probably shift more to issues than elections. And I think we'll probably focus on three or four. I mean, one of the things, our last meeting was on the Saturday when the election was called for Joe Biden. In fact, we were in the middle of the Zoom meeting, and all of a sudden people's phones were pinging and the television was on and people were screaming and excited. And what we decided to do was to wait until January and just take some deep breaths and come back together and decide what it is we're going to do. I know there's strong interest in the group for environmental issues, which are particularly important in a place like Chautauqua County. It's a primarily agricultural. So if we have severe climate change, that's going to have, and it's already having some impacts. So that's a local issue where we can probably engage people who vote red, but who might be concerned if their livelihood is perceived as being threatened. One of the issues I think other people are, I mean, and not to be other, but another issue that people are interested in is electoral reform. So to break the hold of the electoral college, there's multiple ways that can be done, but looking at, you know, one person, one vote, so that my vote in New York doesn't count like 1,000th of a person in Wyoming or whatever. But also making sure that rural voters have a say too, because you can, you know, can be dominated by the cities, and there's good in both.
Yeah, I want to ask you a question about one thing you said at the very beginning of that last answer. You said that going forward, you would expect for your organization to start focusing on issues rather than maybe elections. And obviously, you don't get policy wins unless you have people representing you and who care about your issues in office. So do you think that your organization is going to fully withdraw from electoral politics going forward, or you don't know yet?
I don't know yet, but I would be shocked if we withdrew. I think you hit on a point earlier in terms of being in a red area in a very, very blue state. Where do you put your resources? And this was something we dealt with. You know, do we put resources into local elections where our chances of winning might be slight, or do we work out of state? And so what we did in the letter writing campaigns, people wrote to swing states, they did get out the vote, they did register, you know, and vote by mail. People were writing postcards to all over the country, as well as to 20,000 people in Chautauqua County. You know, so we tried to balance that. And it'll be particularly, tricky, I think, for Chautauqua and Cattaraugus counties, in that every elected official in Chautauqua is a Republican, and yet the state is controlled by Democrats. For the first time, Democrats control the Assembly, the Governor, and the Senate. So in a way, our elected representatives here are kind of disenfranchised anyway, because they're the minority party. So would it be easier for us to work with nearby legislators, move into just educational kinds of things, and until we figure out where we can perhaps become more political? I don't know, but we decided to let that go. We'll come back together in January and decide where we want to go. But I think there are multiple options, and I think part of the strength that we've had has been our flexibility and being able to do different things. So people who want to do environment will be working on that. People who want to do electoral reform, people who want to deal with social justice and racial issues will be working on that. But all together, you know, as one group.
Well, I think everybody deserves a break, and it sounds like your organization has chosen wisely to take a little time off and focus on something else for a little bit. But I'll just say for myself, I hope your organization keeps going, keeps pushing. If I were someone, you know, in your area, in one of your two counties, and I wanted to get involved in January, what would you recommend I do?
Well, we have a Facebook group. It's a closed group, but I think you can. Oh, gee, I don't know now if you can leave us a message. We closed it because some people's employers were noting that, oh, you're a member of that group. So it was safer for some members. If you see us out, and no doubt you will see us out somewhere with signs or with petitions, come join us. Stop by. We picked up members that way. People who say, who are you? What are you doing? And we invite people to come and join us.
If we were to sit down at the computer, log on to Facebook, how would we find you there?
Chautauqua Cattaraugus Women's Action Group, or people could find me individually, you know, by name.
Joy Bilharz.
Yes.
All right, great. I really want to thank you for your time. This has been great.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed it.
All right. Good luck to you and CC WAG going forward. I hope you guys continue to make a big impact.
Thank you so much.
Thank you to Joy Bilharz and all of the members of CC WAG. If you would like to reach out to CC WAG, you can find them on Facebook or at ccwaggroup@gmail.com. That's ccwaggroup@gmail.com. Volunteers like her inspire this podcast. Stay tuned for our next episode and an opportunity to hear from another grassroots progressive leader. In the meantime, check out our website at www.movedtoactionpod.com, where you can find recommended reading lists, including a recommendation from Joy, and find a link to leave a voicemail explaining why you were moved to action, which we may feature on the show. Music for this episode was provided by Michael Oxman, and I am your host, Will Shuey, encouraging you to get involved and stay involved.